The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Well, as we head into hour two, welcome back. I am Seth Leibson, coming to you from the 960 Patriot Broadcast Studio, brought to you by the veteran-owned Midas Gold Group, your trusted source for precious metals, your trusted source for great political analysis, is George Kaloff. He is the managing partner at the Resolute Group, theresolute.group, his website, and, of course, the head of Data Orbital as well. Happy Friday, George.
Always good to be on, providing upbeat political commentary.
Not Eeyore-esque, right. Is that nickname of yours taking hold? I gave you that nickname, and I'm just wondering if it's like taking hold, if it's suffusing in the community.
It is in the social circles that overlap between the two of us, Seth. It is, in fact, taking hold, so thank you for,
the social for that. How many people is that? Two people? Social circles that overlap between the two of us. Are you in my – do we hang out? We don't hang out enough to be in the same social circle, do we? I'm like low level, dirty. You know, I'm kind of a common man, and you're high flying at the country clubs.
Oh yeah, you know me.
Yeah. I see the way you dress and carry on. All right. The talk all week leading up to last night was, of course, State of the Union last night. CNN, I think I saw, said 6 in 10 Americans gave it a thumbs up. Every Republican or conservative source I have read says it says things like Ben Domenech, which was that it was the worst State of the Union speech in history, bitter, angry, etc. But interesting, the liberal left, I guess Joe Biden gave them what they wanted, and maybe they want two different things. I mean, you're never going to satisfy conservatives with a Democratic president or vice versa. But how did you assess it all?
So you and I have talked about this theory often. I would say 40 years ago, both sides had big differences. But in general, the State of the Union was, and I don't mean just the speech. I mean the State of the Union in a sort of
the condition of our country. Yeah,
the condition of the country. Right. We all had generally, you know, we disagreed about how to get to the certain endpoint, but we had generally the same endpoint. So it was not. It was still partisan, but it wasn't like how it's been the last little bit. But now the problem is, and Seth, you and I have talked about this often, we are in effect almost in very, very bifurcated. I don't want to say too separate. That's not appropriate. But exceptionally bifurcated viewpoints of America, viewpoints of how to get there, viewpoints on different end results. I don't know a better way of kind of saying how last night went. It was a State of the Union. That if you're a Democrat, you mainly liked what you heard. If you're a Republican, you absolutely opposed it. And if you're, an American, which Democrats and Republicans both are, or people that maybe don't ascribe to one intensely or the other, there's just anger. There's no vision. We don't agree on where to go. We don't agree on how to get there. We don't agree on much of anything. And it's going to be arguably one of the more contentious presidential races that we've had in the last 50 years. I mean, bottom line, there's no doubt about it. And I think yesterday's State of the Union was very clearly sort of the opening salvo from Joe Biden in that regard.
Is the bar that the Democrats and the left wanted matched, topped by Joe Biden, is the bar a lot lower? I mean, was the bar for them all he needs to do is get through it without a major stumble, and thus we will chalk that up to success? Because they do know, George, despite what Joe Scarborough was saying 2 days ago about this is the best Biden ever, they do know that this man is highly compromised at several levels of articulateness, if not cognition. Was the bar really low? Did he just have to hit a low bar, that is to say, get through a teleprompter speech for an hour?
Well, that and the measure of success is very clearly about the man that's running against him, right? So the measure of success is what Trump and the Republicans are doing to our nation, right? And our bar more or less is, well, this is what they're doing to our nation, and that's what's success. So that's why I'm saying it's like a very partisan speech, which is I'm not saying that every president has partisan affiliation, so I'm not pretending like State of the Unions in the past have not been partisan. Of course they are. But in general, there were themes that we could agree on. I'm not sure that we could even agree on that. Again, we saw some of the stuff last night about service member that was killed and, yep, his, you know, family member shouting. I mean, like it's there's just a lot of intensity in the country, and there's very basic things that are that should be happening and acknowledged, like the fact that there's a woman who was killed by an illegal immigrant in this country, yep, and that's an indication of what's happening on our border, and we're, yep, not even willing to deal with that because we're not willing to say that there's something wrong with the border if you're a Democrat. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that has not always been common in America. Again, candidly, in the 80s and 90s, I don't know if that's how we functioned, but that is how we function today. It's a big problem.
You know, I don't think you and I have ever done this on the air before, what I'm about to throw your way in the bifurcation of this country. In the realm of the discussion about the bifurcation of this country, George, but blame obviously goes around. Everyone can do a little bit better, I do believe. But, you know, I have to tell you, I think the rhetoric of the Democrats has created more bifurcation than the rhetoric of conservatives and Republicans, just as someone who studies rhetoric. I mean, right out of the box last night, for one of many examples I could give, but just taking last night as a template, right out of the box, Joe Biden goes to the Republicans are a threat to democracy. Right out of the box. It's hard to then say that he wants to unite the country and he wants the country to, come to a place of less division. It's hard to do that when you're speaking about the other side as a threat to democracy.
Exactly. And he's not giving clarifications. He's saying Republicans. Well, what,
right,
does that mean? That could mean any registered Republican.
Right.
So you're really casting that broad, like in broad brushstrokes, like every Republican's a threat to democracy,
right,
or a Christian Republican's a threat to democracy. I mean, I'm not saying that had he given clarification, it would have made it better. But yeah, when the president of the United States, who's a registered Democrat, says that about the other party, essentially is a threat to the you know, what he's saying in his own words is he's a, you know, we're a threat to the fabric of the nation.
That's right. That's right. He goes into that trope about five times and then concludes by saying, I ask you all without regard to party to join together and defend our democracy.
Yeah, I
guess that means everyone becomes a Democrat and that's how he unites us. I guess that's his idea.
And even then, we know that that's a precarious thing. And then again, this is on the heels of, by the way, commentary and from people in the news media and others who are then sort of linking in that if you're someone who believes in biblical Christianity, you're a Christian nationalist, right? Like,
I'm sure we
all saw that kind of that clip that was making its way around. I think it was late last week or earlier this week. I mean, these are fundamental these are big things. This is not like a throwaway thing like, oh, we have disagreements. Like that's bigger than disagreement. I mean, there's a lot of people in this nation who believe in biblical Christianity.
I am fascinated by the use of rhetoric, especially extremist rhetoric. And I don't know if my antenna's a little higher than others on this or not. But it is interesting that Christian nationalism has replaced white nationalism, which was the trope for about the last 8 years, it seems like. All of a sudden now it's Christian nationalism. I don't remember hearing that phrase very much. Now I hear it everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they're trying to, I believe, they're trying to make an equation between anyone who believes in Christian, like biblical Christianity or Judeo-Christian values as being racist or as being bad or as being inherently evil and as being inherently bad and anti-American. Again, those are big deals. There are tens of millions of Americans that are in that bucket. That's the problem. We're not, you know, we've had moments of our history where obviously very clearly there were people that were racist. There were people that were bigoted. There were groups of people even today that still do horrible things and say horrible things about other people. And they are by and large in the extreme minority of our nations on any sides and all sides of the political spectrums. But that's not what's being commented on. We're not commenting on the fringes. We're commenting on basic people that sit in any church pew, you know, between here and, I don't know, coast to coast, right? I mean, that's a big deal. That's a very different thing than how we have discussed about things that we disagree in the past. Again, maybe I'm being Pollyanna.
No, I don't think you're being Pollyanna at all. I wonder if I'm being overly sensitive to this stuff, but I know how sophisticated, as you know how sophisticated, these, you know, language mavens, these language shapers, these wordsmiths work, particularly in political campaigns, particularly in presidential political campaigns, where at their they're at their highest pitch. And I just got to tell you, I'm going to take a break on this note and let you respond on the other side of the break. But I got to tell you, when I hear Hillary Clinton, when she was Secretary of State, talking about al-Qaeda as religious extremists, and then I hear her denounce Republicans as extremists, no more terrorism. Now we're all just extremists. I believe that they are using rhetoric to implant in the popular mind that we are like that. And when you now attach Christian fundamentalists or Christian extremists or Christian nationalists, you might as well just be saying religious nationalists or religious extremists in an era where we are still fighting terrorists who are religious extremists. And I wonder if they're just trying to shape the mind that the conservative movement and the Republican Party is akin to the Taliban. I'll let you pick up on that when we come right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. George Kaloff is my guest. He's the managing partner at the Resolute Group. State of the Union, the condition of our political rhetoric going into the presidential season. Let me reframe the question. This new use of the phrase Christian nationalist, which has supplanted white nationalist, it leads one to think of a religious extremist, which is the phrase that a lot of Democrats from Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton were using instead of radical Islam or Islamic terrorists in the 2000s. And I just wonder if there is, George, by your mindset, this attempt by talking about Christian nationalism now to kind of paint the conservative movement and the Republican Party as akin to the kind of terrorists we should be worried about that our allies and ourselves are fighting abroad.
So, Seth, whether by intention or unintention, I don't think it is unreasonable that there will be Americans that are not people of faith, that are on the left or strongly on the left, would consider themselves strong progressives, that would then make that rhetorical tie. Again, even if they don't mean it on purpose, and I don't know, I think some folks do mean it to tie it to that extreme. Maybe some others don't. They don't realize the actual words that are coming out of their mouth. As you and I know in life, many humans do not realize the words that are coming out of their mouth and how they actually land on other people.
Right.
But it is happening because there are people in this country, and again, not an insignificant number of people who believe Christians are detrimental and harmful to this nation. Like,
first
stop. And I don't mean like harmful. Again, it's not that we're Christians are going in and doing things to them specifically, just in general, the Christian mindset or the Christian values are harmful to the nation.
Right.
That's a big deal. And that's only coming from rhetoric that is tying Christians and biblical Christianity and the belief in that to these extremist forces around the world that kill others in the name of faith. Right.
Like, yeah, they know. Are, right. I remember after 9/11 going into the 2002 elections, there was this phrase, the Taliban wing of the Republican Party, for example, for those who were like, I think it's fair to say of you and me, social conservatives. We were of the Taliban wing of the Republican. They have at times tried to make that kind of tried to make a tie there, it seems to me.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. 100%. And I mean, it is. It's problematic,
It'll probably, by the way, go in some ways. If my thesis is correct, it'll go some ways towards the campaign they want to wage on the abortion issue. My guess, just a guess.
Yeah, 100%. Because then this tee up and this is set up, they are able to then connect dots to all kinds of issues that are again sort of based on biblical Christianity or on Judeo-Christian values.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. While we're talking religion and politics, George, how serious of a problem does Joe Biden's presidential reelection campaign have with pro Hamas sentiment in places like Dearborn or Detroit?
I mean, I think on one hand he has a tremendous problem. The question, though, is do they make a judgment call in the general election to say that, I mean, I don't think that they're going to vote for the Republican, right? I don't think they're going to vote for former President Trump, but are they willing to just not vote at all and come out and vote for other things down ballot but not vote for president?
Yeah.
I think that the portions will, but can the community hold? Can their community hold in that level of intensity from now until then? I don't know. But if they do, that is, I think, going to be a big problem, because the margins of votes in Michigan and some of these states where you have this high rate of non-committed, definitely in Michigan, if those people that were non-committed didn't vote in the general election, or even a significant percentage of them, Michigan has goes the other way. Electorally.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you, George, for that analysis, because it seems to me that it just seems to me that there are about four or five states that really matter more than almost any other. What would they be? You can do them better than I can. What would they be? Nevada, Michigan, Arizona, Pennsylvania,
Georgia,
North Carolina, maybe?
Yeah, somewhat. But North Carolina in general kind of leans right. But yeah, I mean, the core are Arizona, Nevada, Michigan, Georgia, Pennsylvania. Sorry, I forgot Pennsylvania. Those are the core. And then, yeah, I think you could add North Carolina easily to that list. But the path of the presidency goes through those states.
Okay. Now, having said that, let's talk about Arizona a little bit. It's a state you obviously live in and know very, very, very well. How does it look in Arizona right now?
I mean, right now as it sits, I think it's a toss-up, leans are, or purely toss-up, depending on when you ask me. It's going to be close. There's no doubt about it. I don't think anyone has a strong foothold in either direction. But I would say probably gut check right now. It's slightly leans Republican at the presidential level, but it's about as pure of a toss-up as you can get.
How did this happen in Arizona? I'm asked that all the time. You're the one to ask. How did this happen? How did the state of John Kyle and Barry Goldwater and, you know, just the whole, you know, Bill Rehnquist. I mean, how did this state become so purple, so cinema?
We have a disproportionate number. Let me step back for a moment. The party, Republican Party, the parties in general are going through a realignment. And so the more college educated and suburban and wealthy that you are, the less likely you are to vote for Republicans over the last decade. And we have a disproportionate percentage of those individuals, particularly because essentially 70% of our population lives, I'm exaggerating here, but a big percentage of our population lives either in an urban or suburban setting. So we have a very small percentage of rural. So for example, what's different between us and Georgia is Georgia, while it has a lot of, you know, college educated, affluent suburban voters in around Atlanta, but the rest of the population is really bifurcated around Georgia. We don't have that here. 60% of our population is in Maricopa County in terms of those that are likely to vote. Another 15% are in Pima County. That's 75% right there between our two major metro areas.
Okay.
So that's why this realignment's happening. So we're getting caught up in what's happening. And while we have quite a bit of rural votes, and obviously in those parts of the state, the Republicans, President Trump, that's why Eli Crane is a congressman in a district that had up until this point elected a Democrat, or at least for the last number of years, and Tom O'Halloran. Why Congressman Eli Crane won is because of that realignment, but we don't have enough of those votes. 25% of our vote comes from rural counties versus in other states, it's closer to 30-40+%.
How do you assess?
So Colorado,
yeah.
One other thought, while we're not as bad as Colorado is because we don't have as many, while we still have a high instance of college educated white affluent voters, we don't have as much as Virginia and Colorado, which is why we're still kind of shades of red.
Okay. All right. Now that cinema is out of the race, let's talk about the Senate race. Control of the Senate, I think, does you tell me whenever I'm wrong, but I do think control of the Senate does run through Arizona and the Senate race here, at least in part or in large part. I wonder how much of that part do you assess, and how's it looking right now?
I do think the control of the Senate runs through Arizona, a couple other places. I would say the Senate race as well is a toss-up. I mean, I think that had cinema been in the race, it was a huge question mark because it was something that you and I have discussed has not really happened in modern history. Now it's fairly clear-cut Democrat versus Republican. So far, the polling doesn't look, great. I think the preponderance of the polls show maybe a slight edge for Congressman Gallego, but he also has a lot more unknown voters.
Hold that thought. Yeah, this is a big topic. Let me take a quick commercial break anyway so we can get the full-throated answer without the interruption. George Kaloff is my guest. He and I will be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, coming to you from the 960 Patriot Broadcast Studio, which is brought to you by the veteran-owned Midas Gold Group, your trusted source for precious metals. George Kaloff is my guest from Data Orbital, and he is the managing partner at the Resolute Group, the Resolute Group. All right, yeah. So, George, we were just saying right before the break, prior to the State of the Union, I think maybe the biggest national story was Sinema dropping out of the race. It wasn't exactly a surprise to us, but as news goes, it was the capstone to a lot of speculation. So now you have a pretty clear and convincing, by any standard, left-wing congressman running for the Senate in Ruben Gallego. And by any standard, a clear and convincing conservative Republican in Kerry Lake. And you assess it as close, yes?
Yeah. I assess it as a toss-up. It's still, again, we need the news of Sinema not getting in to settle. I think there are voters that very clearly there's been lots of polling that have asked both questions. There's a lot of noise in the data. It needs a number of weeks to settle down. And again, I think the biggest difference is, and this doesn't always happen, but in this scenario, it's very clearly happening. Kerry Lake has a almost uniform name ID. What I mean by that is everybody knows who she is, and you've got strong opinions. Yeah. Not everybody knows who Gallego is, right? He was a congressman from a very blue district. He hasn't had to spend a lot of money. He is now having to be introduced. He's got a very colorful background and personality as well, and style that, by right now, by most polls that I'm seeing, about 30% of voters have never heard of him, and versus Kerry Lake is much lower than that. So I think there's a lot of road to go in this race, which is why up until this point, myself and most observers are rating it as a toss up.
You know, as a political consultant extraordinaire, let me ask you a question. This is something I haven't thought about in a long time. In what you just said, if you had a candidate come to you who had universal or near universal name ID with hardened opinions, pro and con, versus a candidate who was undefined without much name ID, what's the better candidate to run in, you know, 6 out of 7 days a week? What would you rather? Someone who's not defined or someone who is well-known and defined?
Well, I'm going to sound like a attorney. No offense to any attorneys yourself and other attorneys listening. It depends. And what I mean by that is if you're well-known, but you have exceptionally high unfavorables, like everybody doesn't like you and you're known, that's a big problem, right? Like Chris Christie is universally known in the state of New Jersey.
Okay.
If you run for office right now, that would be a huge issue.
Yeah.
I'd rather start off with a clean slate.
Okay.
But the problem with the clean slate is you better have enough money, which in today's politics is tens of millions of dollars. You better have enough money to cut through the noise to introduce yourself to the voters. So it kind of depends. I probably, 9 times out of 10, would lean towards the person who has name ID.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too.
The narrative and the perception, unless you're really, really, really intensely baked in negative, which is not very common. It's pretty rare. If you're baked in negative, then I would say, no, I'd rather have a clean slate.
Does the outcome of any of the court cases against Donald Trump change the dynamics of the race much, or have those changes already settled in? I think it's fair to say, again, you always correct me if I'm wrong, and it's fair to say the indictments and the charges against him helped him, at least in the primary, for certain. Does the outcome do much in the general?
Seth, I'm a little convicted about this because there's a lot of polling that is showing, and if these polls are true, it's a big problem that if larger percentages of Republicans are unwilling to vote for him if he's convicted, right? Not indicted, convicted,
right.
That is a big deal. But again, the problem with that, and as a pollster, I'm saying, is polls are snapshots in time. You still are faced with a choice. So does that mean that they just stay home? Does that mean that if they don't want to vote for him, they vote for Joe Biden? Does that mean that, you know, do they, you know, if let's say he gets convicted next week, are they, if there's 6 months that pass or transpire or 3 months, there's a lot of what ifs, like, are they willing to look the other way because they're like, look, the country's just in a bad spot? I don't know if it's as clear cut to say if he's convicted, it's going to spell doom and gloom. I do think there's going to have an effect. It probably would be a bit more of an effect than what the indictments have had. But it's really, again, I don't want to say it's too early to tell. There's just so many factors, so many moving pieces, the state of the economy, the state of the country, the dynamics that Joe Biden's presenting, because again, we still have a choice.
Yeah.
You know, there's not really, and I suppose we'll see if No Labels gives an option or if John F. Kennedy Jr. is going to be on the ballot.
Yeah,
you know, there's not, right now you've got two major party options and everything else, and you know, people have to be faced with that choice.
Yeah, let me talk about the Kennedy candidacy just briefly, if I can keep you one more segment. You got time for one more in you, George?
Let's do it.
All right, George Kaloff is my guest from the Resolute Group and Data Orbital, and he and I will be right back. I just love those lyrics. Huey Lewis, sometimes the light is no consolation. What is that? Standing on a thin line? Walking on a thin line. Yeah, walking on a thin line. George Kaloff is my guest. He is the managing partner at the Resolute Group. Yeah, we haven't mentioned the name Robert Kennedy. I am seeing his name getting more and more attention, I guess, with different efforts getting him on ballot, state ballots here and there, George. Your sense of who he's drawing more from at this point?
It depends. I feel like all I've said this entire interview.
No, it's okay because when people are so definitive, I'm happy to say, well, not so much. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. I think in some instances, in some places, he's taken more from Joe Biden. In other instances, you know, there may be an appeal there for people on the right who feel like, okay, I'm not willing to vote for Donald Trump. The thing that's interesting is I've actually not run into a single other person collecting petition signatures in Arizona as I'm out and about than I have for people with Robert F. Kennedy Jr.,
which is very odd.
Not a single ballot measure, not another candidate for any other office. In multiple grocery stores, I've run into people collecting for him. And obviously, I'm a political nerd, so anytime I see anyone collecting anything, I go up and talk to them so I can get a sense of what they're doing. So, look, his candidacy is interesting because if he qualifies on enough states as an independent, I don't think he's going to poll 10%, but if he polls 2 to 3 to 4, if the Libertarian polls a couple percent, if the Green Party polls a couple percent, if No Labels has something like that, I mean, that could start to really, that could start to alter the dynamic, because then you don't need, you know, you could win at 45%. Again, keeping in mind that obviously we don't win nationwide, we win via electoral votes in different states. And so depending on if there are states where there's some old school Democrats that the Kennedy name still matters, maybe it pulls more from the Democrats versus maybe in some other states where, you know, the state was not really mature at that time, quote unquote, or didn't have that kind of institutional knowledge of the Kennedy name. Maybe it pulls in another direction from the Republicans. So that's why I think it depends in terms of the state and state by state analysis. But I don't know if anyone's done a deep dive into it because no one's certain how many states he's going to qualify for or if he's going to qualify.
Can he be drafted by No Labels? Would they do that? Is that even a possibility? Is that even somewhere on a table? Is that at all?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know that that is a thing anymore, only because he is qualified as an independent already in a number of states, and he's continuing to work on that, and he is spending a lot of money on qualifying as an independent. So I don't know that he would qualify as a No Labels. And it sounds like with the No Labels having a lot of their prospects pull out, I don't know if they're going to have a ticket or if it's going to be a ticket that is a credible ticket. I got to tell you,
I think people do like a strong horse, and No Labels says to me, weak. It just does. Maybe it's me, but it just seems to me like very weak tea, No Labels.
I think people say that they don't want to affiliate, and I think whether it's in our sports lives, whether it's in our fact of a religious affiliation or our anti-religious affiliation, if it's politics, if it's anything, we do like to affiliate. I mean, again, you think about it, as Americans, we do that all the
time. We're joiners. Yeah, we're joiners, right?
Yeah. You want to be part of a team. And so when your team is the no team, it's I don't know that human nature.
We stand for nothing. Yeah, right.
I don't know that human nature loves that. And again, versus the parliamentary system around the world where they have minor parties, those are not like No Labels parties. Those are parties that have distinct differences with one another. And obviously, I mean, I know, like, I'm not saying No Labels doesn't have a distinct difference, but the aura and the perception in which they're giving off is different than how it happens in a parliamentary system for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
For a two-party
dominant. Yeah, no, in those parliamentary systems, usually those, second-rate or third-rate parties, I suppose, I mean, they usually stand for something very strongly. I mean, that is, they're organized around a strong principle. Yeah.
And you have prime ministers that become prime ministers if you head up a plurality of parliament.
Right, you have to put them in the coalition.
And then you're exactly. And then you're the prime minister. Very different, obviously, than what we have here. So it makes things like No Labels or things like independence a very precarious, different dynamic here.
What is your sense of the non-affiliated independent ideology in Arizona right now? Is it still true we're the non-affiliated are the highest box right now?
It is. In terms of registration, it's the lowest. In terms of turnout, I would say in general, independents on immigration lean right, on maybe some other issues they could lean left. They did vote against Donald Trump and against Kari Lake, but in other instances, they vote very strongly for Republicans.
Yeah.
But I think from an issues perspective, and anytime the border is a big deal, independents, I do believe, lean right, and the data bears this out, lean right on border issues, and they tend to lean right on school choice and issues like that. I think what this election is going to come down to is what is the strongest pull in that moment, right? Voters are very, I don't want to say divided, but voters are very at odds, I think, internally, not just between each other, internally. there's an internal conflict. So it's who's going to win that internal conflict. I think that's the question of the day. And it's going to be in states that have early voting, when does that internal conflict come to a resolution? Is it on election day? Is it 2 months beforehand? What causes that? Is it external factors? Is it internal factors? Domestic, foreign? I mean, there's a lot of things, but I think that's the question or the thesis to me of this election is, in those voters, the 5 or 6% of voters that both sides are arguing over that are conflicted between Joe Biden and Donald Trump, because both of them have not, you know, they have pretty high unfavorables with that group of people. Who are they willing to vote for, relatively speaking, to their lives and to the position that they're in? That's going to be the question. And again, I know that that's not rocket science, but I really think that it's going to be a vote either against the opponent or who's going to do the least damage to me for that group of voters. If you're on the far left, you're voting maybe gladly. If you're on the right, you're definitely voting gladly and excitedly for Donald Trump. The question is, what do those 5 or 6% of people in the middle do?
Right.
And
now,
how do they make their decision?
Yeah, right now, if you were to do the snapshot in time, do you think it's immigration or the economy?
I think right now it's immigration.
Yeah.
In Arizona, for sure, and I think in many states, yeah, it's immigration. I mean, the borders, again, when you have Democratic elected officials talking about the border, you know it's a problem. Hard stop, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't need any other data point to tell me that. I don't need polling to tell me that.
Right.
If you have elected congressmen and elected governors that are talking about immigration, elected mayors,
yep.
like the one in New York City talking about immigration and the border,
yep.
you've got a problem.
George Kaloff, you earned your salary with me today. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. I love
always good to be on, Seth.
Love it.
Look forward to talking again soon.
You bet. Good way to end the week. Well, at least the penultimate hour of the week. We have one more hour to go here, and I'll be bringing on political and cultural historian Tevi Troy. But a few more words before we get to that. George Kaloff has been my guest. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Portions of the show brought to you by our good friends at YRefi. They have a secure investment in a collateralized portfolio that really invests in you, where you can turn your income on or off. You can compound it, whatever you like. There are absolutely no fees. There's no attack on principal if you ever need your money back. Of course, you get a monthly statement with no surprises. And best of all, you can earn up to a 10.25% fixed rate of return. And it's not correlated to the stock market or the Fed. A 10.25% fixed rate of return from YRefi. They're headquartered here locally. You can visit them. They're on Chauncey Lane in North Phoenix. They won't give you a sales pitch. You won't be asked to sign a thing. They leave the selling up to me. If you don't visit them in person, check them out online at investyrefi.com. That's invest, the letter Y, then R-E-F-Y.com. Or give them a call at 888- YRefi 24, 888-YRefi 24. And as long as you're going online, take a look at our event on March 26, Fighting for Freedom with Mike Gallagher, Brandon Tatum, and me. We'll also have some other special guests. 960thepatriot.com to get those tickets. It's going to be a delight to have Mike Gallagher in town with us and Brandon on stage talking about the election issues with y'all. March 26 is the event. And listeners to this show can get an additional discount by, in the promo code, writing what, young David?
It's Seth 5 off. Seth, the number 5, OFF off.
That's at 960thepatriot.com, the Fighting for Freedom event, March 26th. Tevi Troy is going to join us. I have a lot of questions for him, not just about the State of the Union. In fact, I want to talk to him about a question that comes up a lot because he was doing a debate last night. Tevi is an observant Jew, and he was doing a debate last night against a liberal one about whether Jews should be liberals or conservatives. And people ask me how they can be liberals all the time. We'll run up by Tevi when we come back. We'll be right back.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
with in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.